You're listening to an event podcast from the Brookings Institution. To get more in-depth analysis and commentary from our scholars, subscribe to the Brookings Cafeteria Podcast on iTunes, download on Stitcher, or find on our website at brookings.edu/BCP.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Bruce Jones. I'm the Vice President and the Director of the Foreign Policy Program here at Brookings. And on behalf of myself and Martin Indyk, the Executive Vice President of Brookings, it's my pleasure to welcome you here today to our Batkin International Leaders Forum with Reuven Rivlin, President of Israel. I'd like to extend a particular welcome to Ambassador Ron Dermer, Israel's ambassador to the United States, as well as other members of the Diplomatic Corps and Brookings trustees who have joined us here today. The Batkin Forum is our platform for hearing from key leaders from around the globe. We've hosted leaders from a number of countries, recently including Joko Widodo of Indonesia, Chief Executive Officer Abdullah Abdullah of Afghanistan, Susana Malkora of the United Nations. These opportunities matter and are critical components of our work for one simple reason. Leadership matters. The foreign policy debate can sometimes become enmeshed in theories of international relations or big data or megatrends, but those of us who have toiled in the field of policy know one thing with certainty, that leaders make a huge difference to the lives of their nations. And when we study foreign policy, we should never forget the individual at the helm of the state, the men and the women who actively shape the world around him. Today, we're fortunate to be joined by such a leader in President Rivlin, a man who has spent his career in politics trying to shape Israel's future, and now, as Israel's president, is his country's leading voice for equality, coexistence, and engaged citizenship in troubled times. I want to say a heartfelt thanks to Alan and Jane Batkin for their support to make this forum possible. In a moment, we'll have a treat for you. President Rivlin has prepared a short video to introduce the subject of his remarks today, the new Israeli society, from melting pot to partnership. Before I sit down, though, I want to say one final thing, which is an enormous thank you to Tamara Woodies, who leads our Middle East and our Israel work here at Brookings with huge knowledge and an equally huge passion, with a tremendous network that spans the Arab world and goes deep into Israeli politics, and without whom today's event would not have been possible. So, Tammy, thank you to you, and we look forward to your introduction after the video. And President Rivlin, thank you for joining us.
החברה הישראלית משנה את פניה. אין מדובר בשינוי של מה בכך, אלא בתמורות שיעצרו מחדש את הזהות שלנו כישראלים וישפיעו עמוקות על הדרך בה אנחנו יכולים להבין את עצמנו וגם את הבית הלאומי שלנו. הסדר הישראלי החדש איננו נבואת זעם עתידנית. זוהי מציאות המשתקפת לנגד עינינו. ראו הרכב כיתות א' במערכת החינוך הישראלית. בשנות ה-90 החברה הישראלית הייתה חברה בנויה מרוב ברור ומוצק שלצידו קיימים מיעוטים. רוב ממלכתי גדול שלצידו שלושה מיעוטים. ציבור דתי-לאומי, מיעוט ערבי ומיעוט חרדי. כיתות א' היום מורכבות מכ-38% חילונים, כ-15% דתיים-לאומים, כרבע ערבים וקרוב לרבע חרדים. התהליכים הדמוגרפיים המעצבים מחדש את פניה של החברה הישראלית יצרו למעשה סדר ישראלי חדש. סדר שבו אין עוד רוב ברור ואין גם מיעוטים ברורים. סדר אולי שבו החברה הישראלית מורכבת מארבעה מגזרים, ואם נרצה ארבעה שבטים מרכזיים שונים במהותם אלה מאלה, שילכו ויתקרבו זה לזה בגודלה. החלוקה החמורה הזאת של החברה הישראלית מתבטאת בראש ובראשונה בחלוקה לארבע זרמי חינוך שונים ונפרדים בתכלית. ילד מבית אל, ילד מרהט, ילדה מהרצליה וילדה מביתר עילית. לא רק שהם לא נפגשים, אלא הם גם מתחנכים לתפיסה שונה בתכלית לגבי ערכי היסוד ואופייה הרצוי של מדינת ישראל. האם תהיה זאת מדינה חילונית וליברלית, יהודית ודמוקרטית? האם תהיה זאת מדינת הלכה יהודית? או דמוקרטיה הלכתית? האם תהיה זאת מדינת כל אזרחיה או לאומיה? שבט, 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 שבט. באופן דומה, לכל שבט, מדורת השבט התקשורתית שלו. העיתונים, אותם הוא קורא, ערוצי הטלוויזיה בהם הוא צופה. כך, לכל שבט, גם ערים משלו. תל אביב, אום אל פחם, אפרת ובני ברק. הסדר הישראלי החדש הוא מציאות בעלת השלכות מרחיקות לכת על החוסן הלאומי של מדינת ישראל, על העתיד של כולנו. כדי ליצור תקווה מוכרחים להכיר את העובדות. הדחקה או מאבק לא יועילו. כולנו, חרדים וחילונים, דתיים וערבים, כאן, כולנו כאן כדי להישאר כאן, ועלינו להבין איך אנו עושים את זה יחד. אם חפצי חיים אנחנו, אם חזון המדינה היהודית והדמוקרטית הוא חלום חיינו, מסעת נפשנו, הרי שאנו נדרשים היום להישיר מבט למציאות הזאת. וזאת, מתוך מחויבות עמוקה למצוא יחד תשובות לשאלות, מתוך נכונות לסרטט יחד כל שבטי ישראל חזון משותף של תקווה ישראלית. הסדר הישראלי החדש דורש מאיתנו היום לעבור מהתפיסה המקובלת של רוב ומיעוט לתפיסה חדשה של שותפות, שותפות בין המגזרים השונים בחברה הישראלית. ישנם ארבעה יסודות שעליהם השותפות הזו מוכרחה לעמוד. הראשון הוא בתחושת הביטחון של כל מגזר, בכך שהכניסה לשותפות הזאת אינה כרוכה בוויתור על מרכיבי היסוד של זהותו. החרדי, החילוני, הדתי או ערבי אינם יכולים להרגיש שציפור נפשם נמצאת בסכנה או תחת איום כלשהו. היסוד השני הוא האחריות המשותפת. כאשר אף שבט אינו מיעוט, אף צד לא יוכל להימלט מנסיעה באחריות לגורלה ועתידה של מדינת ישראל וכלל החברה בישראל. היסוד השלישי הוא הוגנות ושוויון. כדי להבטיח את השותפות בינינו, יהיה עלינו להבטיח שאף אזרח אינו מופלה לרעה או לטובה מתוקף השתייכותו המגזרית. כן, והיסוד הרביעי והמאתגר מכולם הוא יצירת הישראליות המשותפת. הפסיפס הישראלי המתהווה איננו גזרה, אלא הזדמנות אדירה. הזדמנות התומנת בחובה, עושר תרבותי, השראה, אנושיות ורגישות. אם נאמין שלא נגזר עלינו, אלא נועדנו לחיות יחד, נוכל גם נוכל לאתגר. יהיה עלינו להבין כיצד נראה חינוך לשותפות, בהינתן מערכות חינוך נפרדות. כיצד מנהלים משק ומגזר ציבורי שמצטיינים בגיוון תעסוקתי. כיצד נראה תקשורת שמצליחה לשמש גם כפלטפורמה משותפת. אקדמיה שאינה מתפשרת על איכות, אבל יודעת לייצר סביבה תרבותית רגישה. פוליטיקה ושיח פוליטי שמביאים בחשבון את הרגישויות והיסודות של השותפות. ביסוסה של השותפות הזאת היא משימה אדירה. אני עומד כאן בפניכם מתוך תחושה עמוקה שהחברה הישראלית זקוקה היום לקריאת השכמה. אני קורא היום לכולכם, התגייסו יחד איתי לאתגר. רק כך, יחד ובשותפות, נוכל לחדש תקווה ישראלית.
כבוד הנשיא, it is a special honor for us to host you here, President Rivlin, not simply because of your extraordinary leadership as Israel's head of state, but because of the issues that you have brought to discuss with us today. I was in the audience in Herzliya last June when President Rivlin spoke to Israelis about the four tribes that today comprise Israeli society and about the challenge of social cohesion. This emergence of a new Israeli society with no clear majority is a challenge with which America is also becoming familiar. As within a few decades, we too will be a society with no clear ethnic majority. This challenge is evident in the debates gripping Israel today, debates about economic inequality, about how to share the burden of military service, about the dominance of some religious movements over personal status, and about the struggle of Arab citizens of Israel for social, political, and economic equality. The changes in Israeli society have already produced changes in the party system in the Knesset and in a new political discourse, including sometimes about the United States, that has surprised some observers. At Brookings, we saw that it was long past time for the Washington policy community to update its understandings of Israeli society, and we can help. That's why earlier this year, we launched a new initiative called Imagining Israel's Future. Through research, events, other activities, We're bringing issues, debates, and voices from within the new Israeli society to a Washington audience. In the past year, we've hosted events on topics like orthodoxy and feminism and civil rights for Israel's Arab minority. In the coming year, we'll be hosting Israeli visitors at the center and publishing Israeli scholars. I'm very grateful to the Morning Star Foundation and to the Israel Institute for their support that makes this work possible. And there is no better way that I could imagine capping off our first year's effort than by hosting President Ruvi Rivlin here at Brookings. In fact, when we first envisioned this project, hosting Kvod HaNasiy was at the top of our wish list because of the clear, inspiring voice he has provided on just these issues. President Rivlin, of course, is the 10th president of the State of Israel, elected in June last year. His family has been in Jerusalem for 8 generations, and his father, I have to note, was a professor of Middle East studies who translated the Quran into Hebrew. President Rivlin served as an intelligence officer in the IDF, including during the Six-Day War. He worked as a lawyer. His career in politics and public service began on the Jerusalem City Council, where he served for 10 years, and moved on to the Knesset, Israel's parliament, as a member of the Likud Party delegation. In addition to service on a number of committees, President Rivlin was twice elected Speaker of the Knesset and also served as Minister of Communications. And throughout his long career in the rough and tumble of Israeli politics, Ruvi Rivlin has always upheld 2 key principles as sacrosanct: the unity of the country and the preservation of democracy and pluralism. This principled approach has won him admiration and respect from politicians across the Israeli spectrum, left, right, and center. Now, this past year has seen some truly disturbing developments: bitter fights between religious and secular Jews, the burning of a school dedicated to Arab-Jewish coexistence, the murder of a family of Jerusalem Palestinians, apparently by terrorists inspired by an extreme religio-nationalist ideology, who were arrested just last week, and the continued wave of stabbings and other terrorist attacks throughout the country. Through all of this, President Rivlin has been a consistent voice against racism, for tolerance and coexistence. Everything about his work as president demonstrates his commitment to making Israel a secure home for all Israelis, a state that is both Jewish and democratic, a state where everyone lives in security and with mutual respect. I look forward, Kvod HaNasiy, to hearing more about your vision for Israel's future. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming the President of the State of Israel, His Excellency Reuven Rivlin.
Thank you so very much. Thank you. I see that the English language is much more richer than the Hebrew, because I read the translation when I was speaking about the new Israeli agenda, and it was translated into English as the new Israeli order. It's not a new Israeli order. We have no orders in our democracy. At least we hope that we will never have orders in our democracy. So I really believe that the translation that spoke about the new agenda as a new order, maybe it is ambiguity once we are talking in Hebrew, but it should not be translated like that once you are watching what I have said in the Herzliya Convention. Dear guests, dear members of the Brookings Institute, I must say that yesterday I was asked by the President of the United States, Barack Obama, what I'm going to do today. And I've said to him, well, I'll be first thing in the morning at the Brookings Institute. He said, I see that you are going from strength to strength. So God bless all of you. Well, as you have said before, I'm a Jerusalemite, son of Jerusalemite, son of the son of Jerusalemite, son of the son of the son of Jerusalem. Goes back to the year 1809. When my ancestors came from Vilna to Jerusalem. Vilna was defined at the time by the Jewish people as Jerusalem de Vilna. and the Jerusalem Delita. And we came 100 years before Zionism as a political movement because we believed that Jews should not only pray three times a day to God to return us back to Jerusalem, because our head of the family, the Vilna Gaon, the genius of Vilna, said to us, why should we pray three times? If we would like to go to Jerusalem, let's go to Jerusalem. And we came to Jerusalem. And at the time, Jerusalem was not heart of a conflict. There were very few people inside the walls of Jerusalem, and they welcomed us, and we lived together, Jews, Arabs, Armenians, everyone who was situated in Jerusalem as Jerusalemites all together, and we have prayed and we did everything in order to bring prosperity to Jerusalem and to try to bring Jerusalem to become the capital of the believers of all the world. Of course, we believe that Jerusalem is a part of the idea that the Jewish people have to return to their homeland and even to build their own state at the time. And we were in very good friendship with all our neighbors, with all our cousins. We have never thought that we have war one with each other once we are talking about our beliefs and our religion. Of course, we had differences of opinion to whom the land of Israel belongs, and we believe that it belongs according to the promise and according to the beliefs of the Jews that we have to return because we have no other place to go to. When I was born as seventh generation, and now the Rivlins are here for more than 12 generations because there are members of my family that are much more, they have third generations to come every 20 years, while we are very lazy, so it takes us from time to time 30 years for each generation. But there are Rivlins of 12th generation in Jerusalem, and we are the ancient families from the Ashkenazi side, because the Sephardic people who were in Jerusalem, they are already for 17, 18, 19 generation. One of them is the late president of Israel, Yitzhak Navon. God bless his soul. So when I was born in 1939, and it was a long time ago, a century ago, we were in Jerusalem only, and in the land of Israel, only 200,000 Jews. And we lived together within 4 years until 44. There were an extra 200,000 Jews that came from all over the disasters of the World War II. And until 48, we were already 700,000 Jews. When David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, have announced, after getting the approval from the United Nations, have announced the State of Israel. And since then, we are in a conflict. But we have started the real tragedy between the two people who are living in the land of Israel 150 years ago. Because, unfortunately, people in Israel, once we are talking about the conflict, believes that on both sides, unfortunately, even from the kindergarten, that Jews and Arabs are doomed to live together. While it is our destiny to live together, there is no other way to live together, because this is the reality. Now, we are talking about the State of Israel. And, of course, side by side, we have to talk about the conflict with the Palestinians, because Jerusalem, for example, is a microcosm of our ability to live together or to be in war forever. Jerusalem is a microcosmos, whether in the city that we have at about 800,000 inhabitants, Jerusalemites, all of them, we have 300,000 Israeli Palestinians or Jerusalemites, not even Israeli citizens. Altogether, we are being in the same city, living together in the same city, and there are ups and downs that cause a lot of difficulties. I really believe that the tragedy goes because of we have no confidence one in each other, no confidence whatsoever. And in order to be able to discuss the tragedy, in order to be able to try and to find way to bring to an end the tragedy, we have first of all
to have confidence one in each other, and we have no confidence. The Israelis don't believe the Palestinians. The Palestinians reject from time to time the very idea of existence of Israel as a state at all, not only as a Jewish state. And that brings us all the time to ups and downs, to understanding from time to time. Till a few years ago, once we were talking about the Palestinian entity, about President Abbas, that has changed his strategy, and I believe that he knows very well that the future of the Palestinian people, and I never was one who learned how to patronize anyone. I'm not patronizing anyone whatsoever. Because of that, maybe members of the Israeli parliament have decided that they prefer that I will be the president of Israel because we don't agree about the idea of the future of Zionism, but they agree that when I talk to them, never I patronize them. So I really believe that without patronizing anyone, President Abbas knows very well just now that only a few years ago the Hamas was a sort of problem to the Palestinian community. And unfortunately now, most of the Palestinian citizens or the Palestinian people believe that the Hamas is the solution and not the problem. And that brings us to a very, very delicate situation. And I would like immediately to go to the real idea of cooperation. And I believe that the breach, the foundation of every breach, to bridge the gap between the disagreement between us and the Palestinians and the lack of ability to trust one of each other is to start and to begin with the Israeli citizens, Arabs and Jews all together, because when they will understand that they are Israeli citizens, they are serving in the Israeli Knesset, they are part of the Israeli environment, they are part of the Israeli hope, they should be part of the Israeli hope, they are part of the Israeli hope for to be able to really succeed as a human being, as a citizen, not only as a member of one of the communities. Well, when I was born, we have absorbed the Jewish people, so many people who came from all over, from 70 diasporas, from 70 communities. Everyone had his own tradition. Everyone had his own way to pray and to worship God. Everyone had his own foods. Everyone had his own habits. And we have absorbed one each other. The Polish have absorbed the Yemenites. The Yemenites have absorbed the people who came from North Africa. Those have absorbed those people who came from Russia. Everyone absorbed the people who came after them. And we all were in the feelings that we have to build the Jewish state, that we are one community, in spite of differences of opinion between right and wrong, I mean left and wrong or whatever, between people who believe the way of Zionism and where Zionism should lead us to. Everyone really understood very well that we have to be together because there is no other way to bring to the succeed of the idea of the Jewish people to return back to their homeland. So we were 80% of the population altogether. We knew that we have to serve in the army because there is no other one to protect us but the IDF, and it was our army. It was everyone had his own children in the army. And we had the same idea that we have to be together in spite of all differences of opinion. And like in the Talmud and the Gemara, Jews cannot live without differences of opinion. Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, even the candles of Hanukkah, we don't know if we should light them from the first one to the eighth one or from the eighth one to the first one. And halacha kebeit Hillel. So the idea, the core of our tradition is that we have all the time to debate. But we knew one thing, that we are one community. Even people who believed in God more, or really held the 630 mitzvot more or less, because there were even people who have held only 13 mitzvot, they were brought up in a synagogue, and they didn't know that there are other synagogues. Although we always said that in every Jewish character, in every Jewish person, you have three people who, one goes to this synagogue, and that one goes to the next synagogue, and both of them will never enter the third synagogue. But, of course, we had the idea together, and there were minorities, and we have established the democracy of Israel in a parliamentarian way of acting democracy, and we couldn't achieve the ability to write down and to bring approve a constitution. And why it's so? Because we thought the majority from the left side to the wrong side, or from the left side to the right side, or whatever, we felt that without the understanding of the minorities, we could not actually bring to the approval of any kind of constitution, because the constitution, first of all, have a task and a role to keep the rights of the minorities. And we had two minorities, and at the time when we were 80% of the population of Israel in the idea of Zionism and the idea of bringing the state of Israel to prosper, we were talking to the minorities. And there were two minorities, the Arabs and the ultra-Orthodox. And they rejected the idea that the Israeli state would be defined as a Jewish democratic state. The Arabs said to us, well, if we are all in Israel, and we accept Israel because we are citizens of Israel, in spite of the idea that our people are in war with our state, we are rejecting the very idea that Israel would be defined as a Jewish state, because if it's democracy, let it be the state of all its citizens. You can decide from time to time what would be the nature, but don't put it into a sort of constitution. Once we will have majority, if it is possible, to change the definition and to change the character of the Jewish state, not to be a Jewish state, but a state of all its citizens, then we would not agree to give our support to any kind of constitution that will say that Israel is a Jewish state. And we have said no. We know the need for the next few hundred years to remain Israel as a Jewish state, because the Jewish people have no other place, and we have to keep in our hands the only prerogative to have the right of return to every Jew, to his real fatherland, to his homeland. So they have rejected, and they've said, we will not approve, we will not give our hand or our support to the idea that Israel will be a Jewish state, defined as a Jewish state, but Israel, state of all its citizens. And the other minority, the ultra-Orthodox people in Israel, and they are 20%, and once we are talking about the power of voting and power of decision, that much more, because most of them are participating in the election, and if the whole population goes with the 60% of the population going to the polls, they are going almost 80 or 85% once they have to decide upon the future of the democracy of Israel. So they said to us, okay, we understand very well what is democracy, because you explain it to us. It's not too important for us, because we know that everyone is being keeping the rights of everyone, so we trust. In God we trust, all other can be Democrats. And they have said to us, we understand what is the meaning of democracy because you explain it to us, and it is quite clear to us. But what is the meaning of a Jewish state? Is the Jewish state is only according to the halakha? Is the Jewish state is something that goes into other understanding of a Jewish state? So that was a rejection till now about defining Israel as a Jewish democratic state, as long as we are not defining what is a Jewish state. And to their opinion, it's the 613 mitzvot that every Jew has to keep. And I appreciate, but I cannot give my hand to the idea that people cannot think of all the values that we are keeping and we are being appreciated by the entire world. So at the time, when we were 80%, and there were no tribes, there were communities that have held their need to identify themselves and to declare themselves as something which is different, but they were only 20%. They went to their own school. They could influence the community, the atmosphere in Israel, of course, but they could not be decisive. Once we had 80% of the center, and some of them were even, when they were seculars, they were Orthodox seculars, because when they were brought up, the first synagogue that they went to in Israel, in Jerusalem, was an Orthodox synagogue. So when they went to, they understood and they believed that Judaism has no problem to do whatsoever. They have never was brought up in New York or in Los Angeles or in Washington or all over. What they saw till they found out that they would like not to fulfill every one of the orders of the halakha, they did it according to their belief and to their way of living. But we went to different schools, and we learned different programs, and now I only showed the people of Israel the mirror of our community. I'm not so sure that I have the solutions. I'm not so sure that I have the idea how we can solve problems, how we can bring it to an end. But what I have put in before the population in Israel is the idea that we are now not minorities, because every one of the tribe is in the same, they have the same, as they have the same size. Thank you so very much. Now I understand why I have a diplomatic, now we are almost 50%, four tribes, and everyone think differently. Children are not meeting one each other. At the time when 80% have served in the army was the melting pot of the Jewish, of the Israelis, of all of them, beside most of the Israeli Arab citizens, the Israeli Palestinians, if they would like to call themselves Israeli Palestinians. They were citizens that didn't serve in the army. And the army was really the melting pot of all other, of the majority, the real majority that lived in Israel, and now we have less than 50% who are serving in the army. This is a problem. So the only place that Israelis could meet within 5 or 6 years or 10 years or within one generation would be at work, which means that they will find themselves really strangers, one to each other. They have to pay tax in order to make the country able to pass budget and to go on the preference of priorities. Once we are talking about the budget, the security and the burden of security that we are facing, and in those days much more. And because of that, what I've done is to show the whole Israeli people and population that we have something to think about, because it is not anymore minorities and majority. It is a real confederation of minorities. And that is something that we have to take into consideration. I can talk to you about those problems for ours. I really believe that once we are talking about the Palestinians and the Israelis, the first way to build confidence is with the Israeli citizen, with the Israeli Arab citizens, and between the two communities, to let them understand that they have the same hope of every Israeli, and it's quite difficult to convince them, not because only it is very hard and difficult to convince them because they don't want to listen. It's sometimes because you have no really things to tell them and to say to them, you see, let's go together. So I really believe that building the bridge with the Israeli Arabs is something which is necessary to show the Palestinian that peace will come when we will be able to understand that we are living actually in the same space of earth with two states, one state, three states, confederation, whatever, that first of all, while although people think on both sides that it is not the hope of the life to live together, nevertheless, it's not too difficult to live together because it brings you some advantages and the hope that maybe it is our both interest and mutual interest to get to the understanding that in order to bring to an end the tragedy that we are living in is to cooperate and to stand to understand that we are not doomed to live together. It is really our destiny to do so, and it starts in Israel. And it starts with this problem, to bring all these tribes to become communities who has different way of living. Nevertheless, they know that we are one entity, that we are one people, and the hope of the people, the agenda, the new agenda of Israel, is the hope of every citizen of Israel to succeed and to get to really ability to find the Israeli dream part of his life. Thank you very much. Now I'll answer questions. I apologize.
Yeah. Mr. President, is this on? Mr. President, it's really a special honor for me in particular, of course, for Brookings. I'm also a Jerusalemite, of course, as you know. And so it's really particularly special for me. You may not know, but President Rivlin is one of the biggest fans of Beitar Jerusalem, a famed soccer club in Jerusalem.
First time in my life that I was the president of Beitar.
Absolutely. I will confess straight away, and I hope in the spirit of unity you will forgive this. I grew up right by the soccer field of a different team, Migdash HaPoel. That's the last I'll mention that other team.
Now we all have Teddy.
Your Excellency, you spoke about Jerusalem, and you spoke about your family being there from the early 19th century, long before the modern Zionist movement. And Jerusalem, of course, is troubled. It's on many people's minds here in D.C. as well. And when you look at the city, you look at the violence that we see in the streets, but you also look at the microcosm you mentioned, just these tribes, even more so in Jerusalem, with about a third ultra-Orthodox, a third Arab, a third secular, national, religious, and other. What gives you the most hope about the city? What gives you the most concern? Where do you look forward for the city in 20, 30 years?
For 19 years, since 67, all the population in Jerusalem, on the Arab side and in the Israeli side, really believed that we can live together. They had a hope. They knew that the Israeli government is very precise about holding Jerusalem united. We started to cooperate until the first Intifada. That was one of the ups and downs, because we had ups and downs during the years for centuries before these times. So, unfortunately, we, as people who believe that we have united Jerusalem, we kept three refugee camps in Jerusalem. We, after being intimidated by the need of security, have built walls. We have made it quite difficult for Jerusalemites to really fulfill their rights as citizens of Jerusalem. You know that Mayor Teddy Kollett have succeeded at the time in the year 1984 to achieve a mass majority in the Jerusalem municipality because more than 20,000 Jerusalemites from the Arab neighborhoods have voted for him because they said we have to decide upon our future as citizens and we would like to influence. Even at the time, there was a gentleman by the name of Signora. I was a member of the Jerusalem municipality, and he have warned us, the Israelis, listen to us. If you are not going to return back from the idea of uniting Jerusalem or implement the Israeli law on all over Jerusalem, I'm going to run to become the mayor of Jerusalem. I, member of the Likud, said to him, welcome. I would like to be your deputy. In the Likud, of course, they were very much annoyed about my announcement. And I said, if you are really supporting the idea of the Jerusalem Act of the Knesset of Israel, then I'm ready to really to contribute everything that you will become part of the Israeli experience, part of the Israeli way of running Jerusalem. I welcome you. Of course, the first Intifada and the second Intifada brought us once again to the problem that we failed to find really understanding and believe that we can live together. I believe that there are a lot of projects. At the time, for example, there was the Electricity Company of Jerusalem, of East Jerusalem. And we thought that maybe we could combine them with the Israeli Electricity Company. And I said to Teddy Kollek at the time, no, we have to keep the Electricity Company of Jerusalem to be operated by them because we need people from the Palestinian side in Jerusalem to have the ability to run, to manage, and to be part of the people who are running Jerusalem. And they were hesitating. I really believe that the way and the belief of all the Jerusalemites, and I know that most of Jerusalem are quite satisfied beside the understanding that the Palestinian people would like to define themselves as nation. They would like to have their own self-determination about their nationality. But when we are talking about day-by-day life and the cooperation and the ability of everyone to cooperate and to be with the hope that he can achieve his needs as a person, as a human being, and to when he goes to school and when he goes to the university, he can afterwards find his way inside the Israeli hope or the Israeli environment, then, of course, we can come to the idea that we are one community. Unfortunately, for the time being, and as it is developing just now, and the hatred and the not only intimidation, because only today, one more hit, we are in a position that at the time we have the mechanism to find a way in order to bring to an end occasion that we needed understanding from both sides. When we had wars with the states, with Egypt, we afterwards went to negotiate not immediately peace, but ceasefire, and afterwards we managed to bring to peace and to sign a peace treaty and to even to live in peace for the last 40 years, cold peace, but nevertheless peace that brought us even today to the understanding that once we are talking about fighting extremism and fighting fundamentalism, we have to cooperate because it is the best interest of both people. It is a mutual interest of us. We can find a way in order to live together. But now, once we are talking about asata, incitement, and once we are talking about incitement in
the Facebook or the internet, Facebook that comes into every house of every one of us all around the world. And we find that we have no mechanism in order to bring to an end the riots and the violence that we are facing in Jerusalem only today. And I'm sending, and my heart is with them. Something happened in the vicinity of Jerusalem. And those matters are bringing more and more disagreement. It brings people in the children's gardens to believe, if you are a Jew, that Arab is a murderer and that a Jew is an evil. Once we are talking about bringing up and really educating our children, that is something that goes for generations to come. The hope is that everyone will believe that we can live together, because if a Jerusalemite being situated in Sheikh Jarrah say to us, okay, you have closed because it was your need to protect, the burden of security bring you to the idea that you have to build walls between the two sides of Jerusalem. I'm closed in the side of the Israeli, of the Israelis. I'm part of Israel. Let's assume that I would like to be part of Israel. What possibilities do I have? Do I have a chance? Do I have a future? Do I have a hope? Can I go from my school directly to the Hebrew University school, to the Hebrew University, to go to the Technion, to find work, to find job? That is something that goes to the burden of the majorities. We have to find, by all means, the possibility to cooperate. When they say, we don't like to cooperate with you because you are patronizing us, or you would like to impose on us the idea of Israel, we are in problem, because we are not going to give up the idea that Israel exists as a Jewish state. So really, the dialogue, and it's not only a dialogue, the very fact that everyone can use the Israeli hope, that everyone can achieve the Israeli hope, is the real task and the real goal that we have to operate in order to find a way of cooperation between all people all around. And it will be it is still very, very complicated to do so, but we have to start with the first step.
I want to, with your permission, operationalize a bit what you presented to us. You mentioned a scene of Israel now that has tribes, and in particular tribes that study in separate educational systems. These four systems don't meet. They teach, as you said, teach different values, and in one case, even in a different language. The Arab-Israeli educational system teaches mostly in Arabic. This, in a sense, represents a change from a melting pot idea from the early state to a multicultural approach, at best a multicultural approach. How can this be done? How can this be the challenge that you presented to Israelis? How can that be met? Should languages be different? I know you're a proponent of teaching Arabic, for example. But should these different education systems perhaps be merged?
When you live in tribe, you always live in a real threat that somebody wants to impose on you something that you would not be ready to be imposed by. We are living according to our tradition, they would say, according to our principles, according to our values. We can cooperate, but you cannot impose on us. And we find day after day that it is almost impossible to impose, because if you impose something on someone, whenever it would be possible for him, he would rebel once again. So we have to find the understanding that we are living in communities, but the communities needs to cooperate, because we are living also as one country, as one people, as one people that have differences, approach to life, with different differences, approach to beliefs, differences of approach of the way and even of values. But we have to have common values and the understanding that every one of us can live together with the other side. And the melting pot has to be something which is just now be found by every one of us, because you are saying the right thing. Most of the Arab Israelis knows Hebrew. Not fluently, but they know how to talk Hebrew. There are very few of the Jewish
people in the state of Israel who knows Arabic at all. Their parents, some of their parents who came from Arab country, they knew. And once we are talking about the people of Israel. At the time, we were Ashkenazim and Sephardim, and we have tribes from all over the 70 diasporas that have come to Israel. I, for example, a grandpa. I'm a grandpa to 9 grandchildren, 5 boys, 4 girls. 2 of them are Yemenites. You can have no mistake when you see my grown-up grandchildren that are serving in the army just now. You know that they are Rivlins, but you are very sure that they are Yemenites. Nothing, you cannot be mistaken. Their mother is so dominant that they are 2 Yemenite Rivlins. The Gaon in Vilna, I don't believe that in his way of thinking and his beliefs, and he was really one who thought like a prophet about the people of Israel, he was not sure that after 8 generations he will have 2 grandchildren, Yemenite grandchildren. I have 1 Moroccanian. I have 3 Iraqians. Wonderful, 2 of them are girls, 1 is a boy. Ah, wonderful children. They are from Iraq. Nothing to be mistaken about. Don't tell anyone, but I have another 3 that are Ashkenazim, but not everyone can be perfect, so we are managed to be also along with the Ashkenazi grandchildren. So the whole community in Israel has changed. But we cannot bring together those communities who are not forced to live alone. Their tradition, because one who is ultra-Orthodox believes that giving the ability to one of his grandchildren to go to serve in the army, for example, it will bring him to the possible hesitations about what he believes in and about what he was brought up. But in the meantime, the separation between the communities bring us to lack of ability to run the economy of Israel, to run the security of Israel, and they understand it very well. And now we see more and more ultra-Orthodox youth joining the Israeli army, because after that they can, of course, go to work, and after that they are part of the community. They can keep their tradition. They can keep their belief. If you impose on them, they would say, no, no way, no way, no way. If you would say to them, okay, we are living in different communities. We are living in a sort of different tribes, but the need of unification of all of us for our mutual purpose, for our mutual hope to become really something that could be defined as an Israeli hope for all of us, that is the way in order to bring to understanding between all of the communities. I'm saying so. I'm not so sure that it is possible immediately. I'm very, very... I'm not too optimistic to say, you know, to be correctly... To be,
to say the least.
Yeah, it's not to say the least. To be, correctly. Politically correct, or what? It's not politically correct, but nevertheless, I really believe that without imposing, they will understand. The Arab communities had at the time 10 children, 13 children. Now the Jews have 10 children, 13 children, and the Arabs are living in a way that they would like to give all the abilities and just, and I'm not patronizing them. They understand that they would like to live according to the way that they can support and they can bring their children to the best chance that everyone has in order to progress in his life as a personality, as one of the community. So, not imposing, but coming to understanding that the responsibility is on all of us. It's not something that you say, you have to I'm a minority, you have to take care of me. Because minorities are saying, we have to be protected by the majority. Now there are no more majority. Every majority can become a minority in no time. We are 4, actually, to four communities that create the Israeli experience, and the Israeli experience being led only by 38% of the population is something that cannot be done once we are talking about 10 years to come. So I really believe convincing one each other, showing one each other that we can live together, together and separate and together in the same nation, in the same population, I really believe that that will have, it is something that will come to the minds of everyone, because this is necessity. It is something that we cannot live without it.
Thank you, sir. You outlined in your talk four challenges, four tasks for the Israelis. And among them was creating a sense of security for all citizens, and also creating a new sense of Israeliness, what Israeliness would be in this new agenda.
Israeliness would be the hope of every Israeli from all tribes or from all communities, that he have a chance to progress in Israel, although he belongs to one of the communities that are living all together in Israel. Once you will understand that you don't have to meet, for example, we have some programs being led by the presidential house to bring together children from ultra-Orthodox schools, from Israeli Arab schools, from general schools, and from national Orthodox schools. All together, they are meeting every month. There are such meetings, 100 meetings between all those schools from all over Israel, and we are doing a lot in order to let them operate through the internet, first of all. And then they meet one each other, and they see we are all the same. Actually, we are dealing with environment problems, with not something that goes into the merit of the differences between the communities, about general ideas. And they find themselves sitting all together and come home. I must say that some of the parents are refusing to let the children to go into such meetings between all the groups, especially when we are talking about a Jewish school and Arabic school in the state of Israel. They are both schools in Israel. Nevertheless, when we are meeting, they see actually that they are the same. They have the same ability to analyze different issues that they are dealing with once they are in connection through the internet, and after that they meet, and after that they become friends, and after that they are going to summer camps together, and that could bring us to the understanding of every community from all over that it is possible, that it is possible. Okay, we are different. Okay, we have conflict between nations. Okay, we have a real culture war. We have really differences of opinion about how to worship God or how to behave. Nevertheless, we are one unit. Without one, without the other, it's impossible. And that has to start from the beginning, from the high school, and even from the elementary school.
Mr. President, you have to make it to Capitol Hill, and so although we could continue for hours with this, with fascinating.
Wait here, I'll return back.
We will. Thank you very much.
It is a real pleasure, and to meet you. I've heard about the Institute many times. I appreciate, I read the reports from your sessions here, and I was very proud, and I'm very honored to be here, and I'm very happy. God bless all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.